I don't know about you, but I tell you what, that's one of my very favorite worship songs. How about you? I just love it. I just love it. It just brings me to the throne of God, and I appreciate our band so much, and it's just wonderful. Hey, I got a couple of things to update you. Thanks a lot, Jay. We've been praying for Troy Chamberlain, Jeff and Joyce Hendricks' son-in-law. Troy has brain cancer. They thought he had a stroke. Come to find out, the brain cancer is spreading, causing all sorts of problems. Now Troy, I believe, is in Fort Wayne, and Fort Wayne Hospital, I should say, and he has blood clots in both lungs, and I believe pneumonia as well. Just a multitude of problems. He's been on and off of a vent, so please continue to pray for him. I know the family would really appreciate that. And then also, Mario Marino, Debbie Marino's husband. Most of you know Debbie and her family. Mario's husband was diagnosed, I believe, a couple of weeks ago, stage 3 colon cancer. He goes to the doctor's office tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., and so they are requesting your prayer that the doctor would have wisdom and the Lord would give healing. And so please, if they're not on your prayer list, please put them on your prayer list as well. Today we're wrapping up our opening series for 2018. And what we're doing in wrapping this up today, we're wrapping it up from the Old Testament book of Ruth. And here's a bit of trivia you may or may not know. You see, the book of Ruth is only one of two books in the entire Bible that's named after a woman. Got it? Ruth is one book of two books in the entire Bible that's named after a woman. Here's the question for you. What's the other book in the Bible that's named after a woman? On three, if you know it, shout it out. 1, 2, 3. Whoa, good job. Good job. Okay, here's another trivia question. Is Esther in the Old Testament or New Testament? Old Testament, exactly right, exactly right. Good job. And by the way, I mentioned it last week. I really hit it hard on the first week. This week, I want to hit it hard. I want to mention it again, hit it hard again. Would you please read the book of Ruth this week? Would you please do it? Some of you who may not be familiar with the book of Ruth, you're going, man, an Old Testament book? I can't read that much in a week. Come on. No, listen, the book of Ruth, 15 minutes, 20 at the max. It's only a 4-chapter book. So please read that, and you will find out a story that's just absolutely unbelievable. It's just as good as any reality show you find on TV. The book of Ruth is about a lady named Naomi. Naomi has a husband whose name is Elimelech. They live in Bethlehem. However, in that region of the nation, in that region of the world, there is a famine going on. And so they have to make the decision to leave Bethlehem or stay there. If they leave Bethlehem, they're going to be going to a new place called Moab. It's a tough decision for them to make. And Bethlehem is a place where everybody there, they believe in the one true God like we do. They believe in the one true God. However, if they move to Moab, the land of Moab, they worship many gods, many little g gods, a lot of gods. You see, it's a tough decision for them to make. You see, Bethlehem is a godly environment with very, very little food. However, if they go to Moab, Moab's a place where they have a lot of food, but it's an ungodly environment. So they make the decision. The decision is this. They decide to move to the land of Moab. Shortly after they get to the land of Moab, guess what happens? Elimelech, the husband, dies. That's right. He just up and dies. And so here we have Naomi, the wife, and we have two sons, Kilian and Mahlon. They're with her. And here we have this young family without a husband, without a provider. And guess what? They're out there on their own. They're flying without a net. And the two sons, they begin to grow up. And after about 10 years or so, they grow up and they find wives. Wives from Moab. And shortly after they marry these ladies from Moab, guess what happens to the two sons? The two sons die as well. I mean, here we've got these three ladies now living in a man's world. How in the world did they get by? How in the world did they make it? After some time passes, they find out that the region of Bethlehem, that part of the world, the famine is now ended. Naomi makes the decision that she's going to move back to Bethlehem. And she tells her two daughters-in-law, guess what, girls? I'm going to move back home. And she encourages these two girls to stay in Moab, because if they stay in Moab, that's where their family is. If they stay in Moab, that's where all their friends are. If they stay in Moab, that's their homeland. However, the two girls say, no, we're not going to stay in Moab. We're going to move back to Bethlehem with you. Now, why in the world would they want to move to a foreign land with their mother-in-law? I'm guessing a couple of different reasons. Number one, they had a great relationship with her. Not only that, they probably caught a glimpse of her God as well. And Naomi kept saying, no. What you need to do is stay here with your family. One girl ends up staying. The other girl ends up going to Bethlehem. Her name is Ruth, after the book that bears her name. And she moves back to Bethlehem with Naomi. In fact, this is what Ruth said. Ruth said, where you die, Naomi, I will die. Your God will be my God. And so here we have Ruth and Naomi. They're making their way back to Bethlehem for a fresh start. Now, Naomi is up in years. Naomi doesn't have hardly any money. They have hardly any money at all. And when they arrive in Israel, they find out that there's this food assistance program. And here, thumbnail sketch, the food assistance program is this. If you're willing to work, you can have food on the table. You see, the program involved the people who didn't have the money. They would follow the harvesters in the fields during harvest time, and they would be able to pick up any of the grain, any of the food that was dropped in the field, and they could take it home and they could have it for themselves. And that's what Ruth did day after day after day. And while she was there working in the fields, guess who she met? She met her future husband, although at the time she met him, she had no idea. His name was Boaz. She goes home to tell Naomi about Boaz, and Naomi goes, oh, yeah, I know who he is. In fact, Ruth, he is actually one of our relatives. Now, Naomi is wise enough to know that God is at work here, most likely. Not only is God providing food for them, but there's more going on behind the scenes. And also, and this is my translation. Also, Naomi thinks that Boaz has a crush on Ruth. Remember what we talked about last week? Last week, we talked about the fact that Naomi, or I should say Ruth, was in the field, and Boaz comes. Boaz sees Naomi in the field, and Boaz asks his employees, hey, who in the world is that hot chick over there? I mean, she's good looking. I mean, I want to meet her. And he did. You see, God's working behind the scenes here. And there's this Jewish law that now comes into play. The Jewish law is this. It's called the kinsman law, or it's called the family redeemer law. And it goes like this. If there's a single man in the family, he can purchase the land of the deceased, and he can marry the widow. Through a series of events, Boaz realizes that he can actually play a role in this, and that's where we left off last week. We've got Boaz, the bachelor from Bethlehem, and Ruth, the maiden from Moab. And guess what? We're going to find out the rest of the story today. But when we find out the rest of the story, this is what I want you to see. This is what I want you to understand. Naomi's ability to see God working while she's in pain. Did you get that? Naomi's ability to see God at work while she's in pain. To see God working in her life when life isn't rolling out as she had planned it would. How many times have you said, or maybe you've heard it said, man, I tell you what, my life is just so unfair. It is unfair. And you know what? It may be. It may be unfair. But understand, in spite of the fact that your life may be unfair, God's still at work. You see, God still works in your life, even though it seems unfair. Now, before we go any further, let me give you the big idea, the main idea that I want you to see today. And here it is. Write it down on your notes. When we trust God through pain, you ready for this? We leave a legacy of redemption rather than bitterness. We leave a legacy of redemption rather than bitterness. Hear me on this. Every single person on the planet will leave a legacy. And that includes you. Are you with me? Every single person on this planet, including you, will leave a legacy. Your legacy will be one of redemption or a legacy of bitterness. It's your choice. It's up to you. Now, in order for us to set the stage today, let's look back in the book of Ruth, but chapter 1 this time, rather than chapter 4. But let's go to chapter 1 very briefly, and let's set the stage, picking it up in verse 19. So the two of them continued on their journey. That's Ruth and Naomi. They continued on their journey. When they came to Bethlehem, the entire town was excited by their arrival. Is it really Naomi, the women asked? Don't call me Naomi. Instead, call me Mara, for the Almighty has made life very bitter for me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back home empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has caused me to suffer and the Almighty has sent such tragedy upon me? If you've read the Bible very much, you know as well as I do that the Bible includes a lot of brutal honesty. And that's what we see here. She is being brutally honest. And for some of you, you may have or you may be asking right now, God, I don't get it. God, I just simply don't understand it. God, things have been so unbelievably unfair in my life. God, I used to be happy, but God, now I'm just gutting it out in life. That's all I'm doing, and it's really hard for me to smile. You see, Naomi comes home. Everyone's happy to see Naomi. However, she comes home, and she remembers when she was there because she was there with her husband. She remembers she was there because she was there not only with her husband, but her two sons as well. And now, guess what? They're gone. That was the good old days. Now they're gone. And she's basically saying, hey, folks, it's great to be back home, but I'm telling you what, I'm not the same person as I was. I left, and I had my family with me. Now I don't have my husband. Now I don't have my two boys. The joy is gone. She's just being honest. That's all it is. She's just being honest. And that's okay. That's okay to be honest. It's okay to acknowledge the fact that your family picture is different this year than it was last year. It's okay to acknowledge that. In fact, you ought to acknowledge that. And it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to keep your eyes on God in the middle of pain. But don't miss this fact in the story. In the middle of incredible pain, Naomi kept her eyes fixed on God. One step at a time. One breath at a time. You see, it's her willingness to look for God in the pain that allows, it's her willingness to look for God in the pain to allow her to leave a legacy of redemption rather than leaving a legacy of bitterness and pain. Her willingness to look for God in the middle of the pain. Now today, I want to give you three lessons, three very practical lessons. And the lessons that we're going to be talking about today as far as legacy goes aren't really so much lessons as much as they are decisions that you've got to make when you face painful times. In fact, let me say this. These decisions that we're going to be talking about today, they will impact what people will say about you when you leave this world. If you haven't read the story yet, you know that all of us are going to die, right? Eventually, you will die, and these decisions will impact what people will say about you when you're gone. Here's decision or lesson number one. Stay connected to other people. You gotta stay connected to other people. I mean, this is huge. Because when you have a catastrophic event, correct me if I'm wrong, when you have a catastrophic event in your life, most people want to withdraw from the world. I found that to be true in my life. You want to pull away. No phone calls, no visits, no texting, no tweeting, no Facebook. You don't have any contact with anybody. You cut yourself off from the world, but you need people in your world. I mean, Naomi could have hunkered down and she could have cut herself off from civilization, but she stayed connected to her daughters-in-law. And Ruth and Naomi get to Bethlehem. When they get to Bethlehem, guess what they find? They find family. Naomi and Ruth are now even more connected than what they were. Not only is Naomi's God Ruth's God, but Naomi's family is Ruth's family as well. They're even more connected. And you know what? You got to love family, right? I mean, you got to love family, right? I mean, through thick and thin, they're going to be there no matter what. You got to love family. Heard a story about a guy who was at Kroger just a couple of weeks ago. He's going through Kroger. He picked up a couple of items, and just with two items, he went to the express lane, right? Express lane. Found out that the express lane was closed. Bummer. And so he goes over to this other lane, and there's this elderly lady in front of him, and she's got her cart is just mounded with food. And so he's standing there watching her check out, and he notices that she's tearing up, starting to cry a little bit. He says, "Ma'am, are you okay?" She says, "Oh, I'm just fine." He goes, "Ma'am, can I help you with anything?" She says, "No, I'm all right." He goes, "Really?" And she said, "Well, honestly, I tell you what, my son died here recently, and you look so much like my son. It's just uncanny. You look so much like my son. I miss him so much. You see, when he died so suddenly, he didn't have a chance to say goodbye to me." And the man said, "Well, can I help you with anything?" And she says, "You know what? Here's an idea. Would you do this? When I leave the store today, and when I get over there by those exit doors that, you know, kind of go like this, would you please shout across the grocery store, 'Goodbye, Mom! Goodbye, Mom!'" He said, "I'd love to do that for you." And so the lady left the checkout line with her groceries, and she got to the exit door, and the man shouted out across the store, "Goodbye, Mom, goodbye." She said, "Goodbye, son, goodbye." And the man then got up to the cashier, and he was going to pay his bill, and the cashier said, "That'll be $146, please." "What do you mean $146? I only got two items." She said, "Yeah, but your mom told me that you'd pay for her bill too." Right? So be careful when you go to the grocery store next time, right? See a little old lady crying. Here's the deal. You're in your 20s, you've had conflict in your life. You're in your 30s, you've probably experienced some loss at some level. You're in your 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s. And go wherever you want to go with that. You've experienced a lot of grief. When stuff happens in your life, as catastrophic as it might be, you've got to stay connected. You've got to stay connected to your biological family. You've got to stay connected to your spiritual family. You've got to stay connected to this family. You've got to stay connected to your small group family. You've got to stay connected. Naomi stayed connected with her daughters-in-law. Then they got to Bethlehem. She stayed connected in spite of the pain, in spite of the catastrophe. You've got to stay connected. Now, here's a second decision. When you face catastrophe, you got to make this decision. You've got to stay faithful to God. You've got to stay faithful to God. The truth of the matter is this. It is hard for some people to reach out to God for whatever reason. And they actually, deep down inside, they feel guilty about that. And they don't know how to deal with that. Sometimes it's hard to press into God. It's hard to try to get close to God. It's really, really difficult. And sometimes the only reason you press into God is because you know somebody else around you is watching you. Naomi, I think that may have happened to her. Most likely, humanly speaking, she didn't want to talk to anybody in the world. But there she had her two daughters-in-law right in front of her. And they're watching her, and watching her like a hawk. Watching her every move. And she made an impression on them. Naomi knew it. Now, Naomi and Ruth, they go to Bethlehem. Ruth is in the field, gleaning, picking up that which is fallen to the ground behind the harvesters. That's the biblical definition of gleaning. And so she's gleaning. She's picking up food for she and her mother-in-law. And she meets Boaz. Naomi knows something's going on. She picks up on it. She coaches Ruth, and Ruth ends up marrying Boaz. She ends up marrying Boaz. However, before that, we find out, before she marries Boaz, we find out that there's a closer relative who has the first right of refusal. However, Boaz, in his wisdom, Boaz, in God's plan, gets the deal done. And that's where we're picking up the rest of the story today, in chapter 4. So if you've not turned over to chapter 4 yet, turn to chapter 4, look at verses 9 and 10 with me. This is where we left off last week, and this is where we're going to pick up this week. Then Boaz said to the elders and to the crowd standing around, "You are witnesses that today I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. And with the land I have acquired Ruth, the Moabite widow of Mahlon, to be my wife. This way she can have a son to carry on the family name of her dead husband and to inherit the family property in his hometown. You are all witnesses today." You know what that tells me in between the lines, reading in between the lines? That tells me, reading in between the lines, that when you stay faithful to God, God can make things happen. Have you ever said to yourself, man, I don't get this. I don't understand how in the world that happened. God specializes in the impossible. You're saying, man, there's no way in the world that can happen. Not in a million years is that going to happen. But you know what? You stay faithful to God, and you pray to God, and you pray to God. It may not be on your timetable, but God will make things happen that you never thought would happen. That's what He does. Check out verse 13, chapter 4, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth into his home, and she became his wife. When he slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant, and she gave birth to a son. Don't miss this. It was Naomi's faithfulness to God that allowed this whole thing to happen. Naomi stayed faithful to God in her pain, and as a result, God blessed her. How can you stay faithful to God in the middle of your pain? How can you do it? Let me give you three different ways. And by the way, in giving you three different ways that you can stay faithful to God in your pain, it's not always going to be easy. But here's one way. Look at number one. Regardless of your circumstances, set the tone for your family. You hear me on that? Regardless of how catastrophic this event might be, you set the tone for your family. Dads, moms, grandma and grandpa, you are the people who set the tone for your children and your grandchildren. In the middle of the catastrophe, you have got a choice to make. You set the tone. Here's a second way that you can be faithful. The way we respond to circumstances significantly impacts our legacy. How you respond to your circumstances significantly impacts your legacy. A few of you in this church are like Sandy and I. We have lost children. We lost a daughter at 18. Regardless of how catastrophic it might be, when you stay faithful to God, God will stay faithful to you. You hear me on that? When you stay faithful to God, God will stay faithful to you. The way you respond to your circumstances will significantly impact your legacy. Look at number three. Do not let circumstances cloud your focus. Man, I find this to be so true. Don't let your circumstances cloud your focus. But here's the problem in that. On good days, we can see forever, right? We can see 10 miles away. It seems like a million miles on a clear day. However, on a day like today, you drive into church and it's cloudy. On the bad days, you can lose your focus. Last week, last Monday, we as a nation celebrated Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, right? National holiday. This is what Martin Luther King Jr. said. He said, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole situation or even when you can't see the whole situation. Faith is taking the first step. God, I don't know how in the world I'm going to get through this, but I'm with you. You take the first step. Trusting God the entire way. Sometimes our circumstances can be so unbelievably horrific that we lose our focus. And we need to pray, God, would you please help me focus here? God, would you please help me to stay faithful to you, even though I can't see the entire situation here? God, I'm going to keep my eyes on you. As hard as it is, I'm going to keep my eyes on you. Step by step. Breath by breath. Hour by hour. Stay connected to other people. Stay faithful to God. Here's a third thing. Stay centered on God's plan. Stay centered on God's plan. And I chuckle only because of this. God does have a plan for your life. And some of you are going, oh yeah, right. God does have a plan for your life. And God will work His plan in your life. Comma, if you let Him. Some of us are so hard-headed, some of us are so rebellious that guess what? I'm going to do it my way or it's no way. Let God work His plan in your life. Allow Him in your life to work His plan. And you see, the problem is we think we've got a better plan. Oh yeah, God, I know you've got a plan for my life, but guess what, God? It's not moving quite fast enough here. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of help. Since when did God need help with anything? Oh yeah, God, I know you've got a plan, and you want me to go down this road right here. But instead, you say, you know what, God, in spite of you going down that road, I think we ought to go down that road. You see, the problem comes when we get ourselves involved and we think we've got a better plan than what God has. Hear me, loud and clear. In fact, you might want to write this down. When you're not on God's plan, you're in enemy territory. When you're not on God's plan, you are in enemy territory. Satan is alive and well. Satan wants to steal, wants to kill, wants to destroy you. And he will stop at nothing trying to do that. Do you hear what I'm saying? This last week, we had two fellows walk into the church building. Both fellas, young guys, young families, both of them have lived life in their past in such a way that God's not happy. Both of them have turned their lives around. One of the fellas had a catastrophic event happen to him this last week, and guess where the first place was he chose to go? He chose to go to church. To talk with a couple of people. And guess what I said to him? I said to this one guy, I said, you know what? Satan wants to get you back. He wants you back for his own. And you know what he said to me without blinking an eye? He said, it ain't going to work. It ain't going to work. Every single one of us in this room need to have that attitude. It ain't going to work. I belong to God and no one else is going to get me. Is it going to be easy? No. Not at all. Allow God into your story. Allow Him into your story. You bring your darkest moments to God because guess what? God's the only one who can turn your life. He's the only one that can turn your life around for your good. I mean, how many times have you tried to turn your life around? Has it worked by you turning your own life around? I would venture to say no. Allow God into your story because God's the only one who can turn your life around for your good in the long run, for your good and His glory. Allow God into your life. You see, we're called to be faithful. And here's something else. Allow your kids and your grandkids to see God at work. I got to be honest with you. I'm not very good at that. I am not very good at that. I'm a very private person. I'm not very good at that. But allow your kids to see God at work in your life. I mean, when we go through tough times, we ought to be telling our kids about how God's working in our tough times in life. Oh, we might share that with a spouse. Oh, honey, guess what happened today? We might share that with a very best friend. Oh, guess what happened today? Guess what God did? But man, I'm telling you what, we ought to be connecting the dots for our kids. Connect the dots. I think that's what Naomi did. Look at chapter 4 again, and let's begin in verse 14. Then the woman of the town said to Naomi, praise the Lord who has now provided a redeemer for your family. May this child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age. For he is the son of your daughter-in-law who loves you and has been better to you than seven sons. This is referring to Ruth's baby, the newborn. The baby changes Ruth's life as well as Naomi's life. Remember back in chapter 1, verse 19, 20, and 21, we read just at the very beginning? Remember what Naomi said to the townspeople, the other ladies? Hey, don't call me Naomi anymore. I want you to call me Mara. In Hebrew, you know what the word Mara means? It means bitter. We kind of found that out pretty easily. It means bitter. Just call me bitter. That's going to be my legacy. And I don't care. Do you think now she wants to be known as bitter? Do you think now she wants to be known as Mara? No, she doesn't. I mean, she's got a little grandbaby in her lap. Doesn't a little grandbaby in your lap make you smile? Kind of changes your outlook on life, right? God, you see what happened here? God saw her pain. God noticed that she lost the three most significant people in her life. And she stayed open to God, and God redeemed her pain. Look at the next few verses, 16 and 17. Naomi took the baby and cuddled him to her breast. And she cared for him as if he were her own. The neighbor women said, now at last Naomi has a son again. Boaz was the family redeemer. For both Naomi and Ruth, redeemed them, property, son, redeemed them out of their pain. Out of their pain. Who in this room has not experienced pain? Some have experienced pain a lot more than others, but guess what? All of us have experienced pain. All of us. Now, let's wrap this thing up. Let me give you three application points. Number one, What Satan intended to break her, God used to make her. What Satan intended to break her, God intended to make her. Satan wants to take you out. Are you with me? Are you hearing me? He wants to take you down by any means possible. He wants to take you down through the dark moments in your life. That's his intention. That's what he wants to do. And God says, no, 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 no. I don't want that to happen. I want to redeem those bad times. I want to make those bad times work for your good and my glory. You see, give the darkest moments in your life, give the dark moments in your life to God. I'm pleading with you, please. Give those dark moments in your life to God. Is it going to be easy? No. It's not going to be easy, but you give them to God and allow God to turn them around, because God's the only one who can turn them around. The only one. You've tried to turn them around, and where has that gotten you? Let God turn them around. Check this out, Romans 8:28. Probably a lot of you know this by memory. And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good. Everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. Application number two. God's plan may take longer than you think. It should, but he's never late. Like I said before, God has a plan. It may not be obvious, but he has a plan. It may not be your timing. It may not go down the road you think it ought to go down, but his plan is the right plan for your life. And his plan is what's best for your life. In fact, here's something you need to write this down too. The way you hear me, every eye up here. How you handle adversity will rub off on your kids. How you handle adversity will rub off on your kids and your grandkids. Your kids and your grandkids watch you like a hawk. How do you respond in tough times? How do you respond? What do you do? Where do you go? Who do you see? Who do you talk to? How do you respond in tough times? Understand, God does not cause the pain in your life. Does not cause it. How you respond is everything, because God can use it to make you a better person. But it's your choice. Application number three. God will work through every circumstance. God will heal all our wounds, comma, eventually. Eventually. In his time, in his way. Quite honestly, the disease may not be cured this side of heaven. Honestly, restored health may not come back this side of heaven. The healing will happen in his time, in his way. We need to trust him. In his time, in his way. And so what do we do? What do? In the meantime, as we trust God, what do? We stay faithful. We keep our eyes fixed on him. It might get foggy around us. We strain our eyes to keep our eyes fixed on him. We stay faithful. Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, we come to you today humbled. Humbled that you would love us. God, so many of us in this room, including myself, have just messed up royally. And God, you still love us. We're amazed and grateful. God, as we come to the end of this service, I pray that as we look forward in our lives, as we look forward, God, I pray that we will remain faithful. And God, if there's anybody here today who is here and has not named you as their leader and forgiver, their Lord and their Savior, God, I really pray that they'll make that decision today. God, help us all to make good decisions that'll bring a smile to your face. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. If you have any decisions today to make, boy, I'd love to talk to you about that. I really would. Let's all stand, shall we? I'll meet you up front. Let's sing together.